Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome back to Glittering at Turd. Today, intro from London. So you may plane flying over, or the racket of some local builders, or even a siren. Rinning, having just listened back to today's episode with comedian Rosie Jones. This is slightly different this week as we discuss more of an indirect turd, I suppose. The turd doesn't really belong to Rosie. It very much belongs to society and how they view Rosie's disability. I think really, really interesting. I sure did. So without further ado and waffle from me, I will let you have a listen. Enjoy. Today's guest is the hilarious comedian Rosie Jones. She's also an actress, an author, a writer, presenter, and I think all-round brilliant human. I've known Rosie for a few years now and can confirm she is a joy to be around. So, Rosie, thanks for talking to me today about turds.
Chris, thank you so much. What a lovely introduction. Basically, I do everything if you pay me for it.
Are you happy to tell me what your turd is?
It was interesting because I've known about this podcast for ages and I've been so excited to do that. But I've been walking around going... What's my turd? I don't know. I don't have a turd. But I decided it's obvious. My turd is my bloody disability, cerebral palsy, because... We'll get into it later, but I've been disabled all my life, and I've always said I love being disabled. Oh, that's sorry for the listener, my kitten just walked past. So, in conclusion, my turd is my disability, even though I don't see it as a turd. But I think right now, society makes it a turd.
I wanted you to come on today to share your thoughts on... Because I've seen you talk about your cerebral palsy so much and you have lived with it all your life. You don't know any different and you've made it almost your superpower, I think. And it really is, it has nothing to do with you. It's more how everyone else treats cerebral palsy and your disability. That is the issue here. So let's get into that instead.
Let's unpack that 32-year box. Holy moly.
Yeah, where do you want to start?
So I'm 32 and I turned 30 in lockdown, which was an absolute bugger because I love a party and I was so annoyed that I couldn't get drunk and celebrate with my friends. But actually, turning a milestone age in lockdown made me think a lot about who I am and disability, and I think the pandemic was hard on everybody, but it was especially hard on disabled people and people with long-term health conditions. Like the lovely combination between a global pandemic and me turning 30 made me really think about my disability in society. I came to the realization that I have internalized ableism. And yeah, so I don't know where to start. We could start at my birth, but I think what is more interesting to me right now is that notion of going into my mid-30s and A, realizing that society thinks disabled people are kind of like still a underclass, and B, checking myself for internalized ableism and sort of undoing all these bad thoughts and prejudices that I now realize society has put on me all my life.
I think I read somewhere that it was you realizing that you're not in a wheelchair, you don't use a walking aid, and you realizing that actually maybe a walking aid would be useful, but you're not doing it because you're almost forcing yourself to think, oh, I don't need it. But actually what that problem, the issue there is that you think you'd be a lesser human. That's it internally. You're not thinking it, but you are a lesser human because you're then using an aid that is not deemed normal. So that must have been a horrible realization.
Yeah, and I've had a similar realization recently around mental health. Like, all my life I have said I got busy, I got cerebral palsy, which is a physical disability, but don't worry, not being strongly mentally, I'm absolutely there. As if there was something wrong with having a mental health condition. Like, there's no hierarchy in disability. And the truth is, the majority of people with physical disabilities also have mental health issues because of the strain it has on your life and your body. And I think I spent my whole life going, I got cerebral palsy, but I'm happy. I don't use a wheelchair. I don't have a mental health condition. I don't get tired. I can do everything you want me to. Almost like I'm going out proving society wrong. And that isn't how A, you may change, and B, that isn't looking after myself, because I've now created this character that I can't sustain in my 30s, 40s. I can't be an 88-year-old woman with cerebral palsy going, no, I don't need help, I don't need a wheelchair, I need more help than the average able-bodied adult. But the fact that I do need help, I shouldn't see that as a weakness, because it's not. It's just me living my bloody life. And you said just then that my disability is my superpower. And I really believe that, but I'm not a superhero and nobody is.
Oh, I can relate to the not asking for help thing massively. I think, I don't know, there's something about cancer and wanting to prove that you can still live this life really well with it, and that's not always doable and it's not as sustainable, like you say. And I think a lot of people are suffering behind closed doors because outwardly they want to be seeing, but they want to be seen as someone who's coping, and it's just not always possible. Do you think because of the space, so the spaces you are trying to get into and occupy, so the comedy space, the acting space, you know, the presenter space, the panel show space, they are spaces that obviously you're going to be more, I guess, palatable and more usable if you can convince them, like, oh, I don't need a wheelchair, so you don't need, I don't need special accessibility things to get me to there. So I guess you have needed to be this person to occupy these spaces, but now that you're in them, you can shake things up, can't you?
Yeah, and this is where I'm a little bit torn, because now that I'm older, I'm beating myself up for not really telling people the truth and not really showing it when I need help. But you're right, the unfortunate truth is, I reckon when I started my career, if I had said things like, I will be coming to studio in a scooter, or if I said, I can only work 3 days in a row, and then I need a break, I don't think I would have got the opportunities and the doors at it. I need to acknowledge the fact that I've only been doing comedy for 5 years. And when you bear in mind that 2 of those years was a global pandemic, I've done all right. I'm doing okay. But it hasn't happened by accident. It's happened because I was gigging 6-7 times a week and holding down a full-time job. It happened because I was taking writing jobs as well as that. So I was coming home at 11 o'clock at night and then doing 4-5 hours writing. I think the first 3 years of my career, I averaged about 4 hours sleep a night. And that isn't sustainable for anybody. But I did it because I'm a stubborn bugger and I wanted to achieve. And recently I wrote an article about the fact that if you Google disabled comedian, you see me. According to Google, I am the disabled comedian. And that isn't true. Like, there's so many other brilliant disabled comedians, but I'm probably the biggest one right now. And I got a theory that it's because I am, and I'm doing quotations, I am the perfect amount of disabled. And it's a chicken or the egg situation. I also think I've done well because of my attitude and because of my personality. I am naturally a loud, happy, positive person, and I think a lot of people relate to that. But I don't know whether this is my true, genuine personality or whether I had to create it at a very young age as a defense mechanism, so I'm not remembered as a disabled one. I'm remembered as a loud, happy, fun one. And when we go into that, when we go into really dissecting what parts of my personality I've had to fabricate as a result of prejudice, that's a very deep, hard question. My gut is, if I were able-bodied, I'd still be the loud one in the pub telling jokes, but I might not have pursued comedy to this extent. And then we're going into the positives of my disability in that it's given me more of that drive and that stubbornness to prove people wrong.
Yes. I love that. I think what you're actually saying is, Rosie James, you're actually a real bitch.
Yes! I am the real bitch.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I think it's totally fair to have an identity crisis in your 30s, but I think what you're bringing up and like what you're realizing now is like so important. But I think you're at that stage where it's a great thing to realize because you can actually do something with that. Now that you're in this space, you can use it to your advantage and educate people. So let's talk about the glittery bits a bit more then.
Yeah, let's glitter that bloody tooth.
So what do you hope to do next? What's your plan of attack?
I mean, I want to attack lots. I'm going to start with me individually and my life, and then hopefully branch off to society and then the inevitable world domination. So in terms of me, myself, my identity crisis in my 30s. I'm really taking it seriously. And I'm going to therapy and I'm really trying to undo that notion of I don't need to be okay and happy all the time. In terms of my job, like you say, I'm getting to a really good position where I think I'm respected in the comedy world, and I'm now at a point where I don't need to do 8 gigs a week. I don't need to function on 4 hours sleep a night. But if you want me, I can only work 4 days a week. And when I say I'm tired, we stop filming. But again, I'm well aware that a newer disabled comedian might not feel confident to make those, again, quotation mark, demands, because it's not like it's Bloody Mariah Carey demanding a certain temperature. It's literally me saying, here's how I don't get a 4 day migraine. But then if we branch it out, I'm hoping that my work and my visibility on TV will make it easier for other disabled comedians and disabled people in general to see me and go, oh wow, if she can do that, I can do that. So I think with everything in life, you gotta take care of yourself, but it's also about not pulling up the ladder. It's making space for other people. I speak a lot about allies. Actually, disability is a minority out of anything that you don't know if you'll join our group. Like anyone could become disabled. So if you're an ally for us, you don't know that one day you'll be fighting for a group that you're actually in.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, I feel like you're going to be spearheading this movement. No pressure, but
I'll get my flag out and I'll get on the street. Oh, sorry, I keep talking, but one small thing. I'm talking a lot about the movements, and I think they've all been brilliant, but what I've noticed in terms of Me Too, Black Lives Matter, and the queer movement as a whole. Disabled people are in all of those categories, but during Me Too, no one was speaking about the experiences of disabled women. Mm-hmm. And again, during Black Lives Matter, I barely read anything about disabled people of colour. And that's the thing. Disabled people are everywhere. They are gay, they are black, they are women. But I feel like even within those minorities, we're not spoken about at all.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Do you think it's the... Where can we start with this sort of education and getting things moving? Because I think sometimes people are so overwhelmed by movements like Black Lives Matter and Me Too. Like, it, and obviously it starts with stories. It starts with usually something traumatic and horrific, and that's when a story spreads. But where sometimes people get overwhelmed, like, well, I'm not going to start a movement. Why would I start the movement? That sounds so big and unachievable. But what are the little things that people can do day to day?
Oh, that's a hard one. So I think there's many different things that need to happen at once. I think a big one is education. We need to teach children about disability in schools, because the thing about human beings is we are not born with prejudice. And my favourite thing is when a child comes up to me and goes, "Why do you talk funny? Or what's wrong with your legs?" And you can see their parents are absolutely mortified. And the adults, the parents, have a certain shame surrounding that. And actually, the adults themselves probably don't know why I talk funny. They probably don't exactly know what cerebral palsy is. And they try to pop that shame into their children, and they go, "No, no, don't bother the lady." and now you're ready to go. No, no, it's a good question. And I tell them about cerebral palsy and how I've been like this all my life, and I'm not in pain, and I really like it. And afterwards, the children always go, oh, okay, brilliant. And that is the small scale. So if we get to human beings early on, if we teach them that the world is wonderful and diverse, then we won't be hit with all this prejudice in adulthood.
Can we just quickly talk about your
birth? Oh my God. That is such a lovely segue.
Isn't it? Oh, I've lost the thing. Yeah. So Edie, the amazing Edie Eckhart. I mean, I wanted to talk to you about the book from the get-go, but obviously this is, it's not a memoir, but ultimately it's the story of a secondary school girl who's got cerebral palsy, who's dealing with all sorts of, I mean, she sounds like you. She sounds like the positive Polly, the one that wanted to be happy all the time, be funny and make people laugh. And then realizes that she can be sad too, that she can have all these emotions, and then ultimately also realizes that she's got feelings for a girl. And I think, like, this is a book I wish I had read at school, because I think it would have totally, well, it would have made, I think we come into the world when we're meant to be adults, and we're not prepared for those, what we deem tricky situations with people that are not the same as us, because no one has ever presented them to us. Like, if they're not around us, then how are we ever meant to, like, know how to deal with that situation? And also know that there's nothing to deal with. It's just being human with another human.
Exactly. And thank you so much for reading my book. It's a thing that I'm absolutely most proud of, out of everything I've done. And I'm just about to release the second book. So I've been doing a little bit of a book tour, and oh my God, my little heart cannot cope with it. The amount of children who come up to me with dogged copies of my book, and they say, it's my favourite book. Ooh. I've read it 10 times. And what has struck me is I predominantly wrote it for disabled children. Because when I was a disabled child, there was nothing in books that I could relate to. So I really wanted to create a hero who had a disability. But more than that, what has made me even more emotional is the amount of able-bodied children who read it and enjoy it. And like you say, they're educated, but more than that, they're just like Edith. Mm. They like her. They love her as a character. And I felt emotional on Wood Book Day because I got so many photos of little girls dressing up as Edie for school. And some were disabled and some were able-bodied. And that notion of wanting to dress up as your favourite character who just happens to be disabled, they didn't have a problem with that. I don't even think it was an issue in the head for them. I'm so, so proud of what I've written.
You should be. It's a really beautiful, funny book. And I'm gonna pass it on to a kid who I know will love it too. I mean that in itself is such a glittery part of your experience, right? And that's gonna help so many people.
Thank you. Yeah, it definitely feels like a big part of the glitter, because hopefully the children who read it will then grow up, and when they meet disabled people in their lives, there'll be absolutely no prejudice.
Yeah, so how it should be. Well, okay, we could talk all day, but I want us to move on to, and if you think you can, please share one lesson that you'd like to pass on to us, that you've learned from your turd or glittering of it.
I feel like I learn things every single day. It's something that I need to remind to myself, but it's not weak to ever ask for help. We're not in this world alone, and I feel like whether you're a gay disabled woman, or if you're a straight able-bodied man, everyone needs help. But I think there's a taboo even now asking for help, because society thinks that's a form of weakness. And it's not. It's checking in and it's being the best version of yourself that you can be. And that means that every now and then, every single one of us needs to go to somebody and say, help.
I think I actually really needed to hear that today. So thanks, Rosie. Okay, and then an item. It could be a thing. It could be an item of food or a person or a place or a word or anything that has helped you to glitter your turd?
Things help me every single day. But it's a cliche, but I probably say my mum, because I've had my turd all my life, and she was the first person to show me how to glitter it. And every time my turd feels a little bit too turdy, she's always there to be my biggest champion, my biggest confidant. And yeah, I wouldn't be the person I am today without my mum.
Love that. Your mum sounds great.
She's amazing.
Okay, we're now going to listen to Eleanor share her story of glittering a turd.
So I have experienced psychosis twice, which is a serious mental illness, and it's based around sort of having delusions and hallucinations. A lot of my delusions were around monitoring, so through the government sort of having control of my mobile, that I was an agent for the MI5, which has no basis in reality. So I had a really crap time trying to get my sort of sanity back. And I think that this issue really needs to be highlighted. It's really important that people hear stories and normalize mental illness, because so many people are affected. And the way in which I've glittered my turd is that I have now been recruited by the early intervention in psychosis team for the NHS in Berkshire. I've really turned a corner. I'm managing my mental health so much better. Well, I guess my psychosis is in remission for 2 years. So I'm feeling really good about that.
Oh, my goodness. Well done, Eleanor. That's epic.
Yeah.
To turn that around.
Yeah. Oh. That's amazing. And I feel like it's exactly what we've been saying today of having a turd, but then using it in order to help other people and to make this a world where no one feels like they're on their own. Eleanor sounds incredible.
Okay, thank you. This brings us to the end of our chat. Have you still got some tea or whatever was in your cup before?
Yes, coffee.
Coffee. I've got tea dregs in mine. Let's cheers to turds. And to, I also want to cheers to Edie Eckard. And what would you like to cheers to?
Josh. Talking to you today has put even more glitter on the turd, and I really feel like we've not talked about the importance of friends and conversations and being able to open up and be honest with a good person. So to friends and good people.
Cheers. Cheers, 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 cheers. Well, I have so many valuable takeaways from what Rosie shared with us. Firstly, and very personally, I constantly need to be reminded that asking for help is not a weakness. I think, you know, being positive and claiming that everything is okay does such a disservice to the human experience, and especially more vulnerable people. Also,
it shouldn't take many years of oppression, as was the case for people of colour, or long years of stigmatisation, as is the case for people with disabilities, and the movements like Black Lives Matter that have followed, for us to simply give a shit about humans. Thank you, Rosie, for tackling this and, you know, making us laugh too. Also thanks to Eleanor for sharing your turd littering story with us, and to you lot for listening. I'm honestly so moved by the impact of this podcast so far. I hope that you can keep sharing the love with your mates and online. You can also rate and review the Glittering a Turd podcast on your podcast app and follow it so you don't miss any future episodes. Right, I shall see you next time. Lots of love to you. Goodbye.